Okay, let's reconvene. Senator Dibble, I think we had finished going through the spreadsheet, and we were going to have Ms. Brzozowski, I think, go through some of the language. Is she here?
She's not, Mr. Chair. Then I'll start doing that.
Okay. So good.
We'll start with Article 2, which is on page 22. The first section has to do with we had mentioned earlier the county wheelage tax. What that does, Mr. Chair and members, is it provides that those counties that do want to opt for a wheelage tax would opt for a $10 wheelage tax. We have to hold that that amount. I think I explained earlier the same amount because of the lack of flexibility in our current driver and vehicle services system. That flexibility will be available to us when MNLARS is fully operational in 2017. So then counties that opt for the wheelage tax can raise up to $20 if they so choose beginning in 2017. Oh, here's Ms. Brzozowski. I just started before I walked through the Article 2. So that was section one. Section two starts on the bottom of 23, and Ms. Brzozowski will take over.
Mr. Chair and members, section two relates to driver's license agents and allows them to collect and retain a fee of $8 as opposed to the current $5. Section 3 is the motor fuel's gross receipts tax. And this is a new tax, new language, that is being imposed on distributors of various motor fuels and special fuels. It's paid by distributors on the first sale at wholesale of these fuels for use within the state of Minnesota on the roads. And it's imposed at a rate of 5.5%. It provides certain credits and refunds. It provides for quarterly reporting by the distributor to revenue. It provides for administrative provisions. And it also states that the revenues from the gross receipts tax will go into the highway user tax distribution fund. And this tax is constitutionally dedicated to highways. Section 4 reduces the gas tax rate from its current 25 cents per gallon to 19 cents per gallon. And in Sections 4 and 5, there are corresponding reductions to other gasoline fuels and special fuels. Section 6 is conforming language to include the gross receipts tax in a section that specifies which taxes are allowed to be imposed. Section 7 changes the distribution of revenues on the motor vehicle lease sales tax, and that was discussed this morning in connection with the spreadsheet. So just briefly, it maintains the current $32 million off the top for the general fund, and then instead of an even split between Greater Minnesota Transit and the County State Aid Highway Fund in the metro, five counties, it freezes CASA at $9 million and gives the remainder to Greater Minnesota Transit. Sections 8 and 9 are, Section 8 is a modification of the existing quarter cent metro sales tax for transit, and which is county-based and allows for imposition by the counties. And there are significant amendments to that section. And reading that in conjunction with Section 9, that will give you an idea of the way the new metro sales tax for transportation will be treated, or for transit, rather. Some of the changes are that the additional tax, we don't do away with the initial quarter cent, which is being imposed now in five counties in the metro area, all counties except for Scott and Carver. Subdivision 2A is structured in a way to comply with the streamlined sales tax requirements so that it imposes a three-quarter cent tax across the entire metro, but for a county that's already paying the quarter, that's credited against this imposition of three-quarters. So the bottom line is everybody in the metro is subject to this three-quarter cent tax. There's also a provision for an excise tax of $20 per motor vehicle sale rather than the three-quarters of a cent. The idea is that all seven counties will enter into an amended joint powers agreement to form this new joint powers board, which is made up of mostly of county representatives, also the chair of the Met Council. And there is still a committee that's known as the GEARS Committee, which is grant application, grant evaluation, and ranking. And the GEARS Committee now has more city representation in the bill than it does currently under current law. And the GEARS Committee will still evaluate grant applications, but make recommendations to the Joint Powers Board. But they also, the GEARS Committee will have authority to spend at least 3.75% of net transit sales tax proceeds. And the purposes for which those grants can be spent by GEARS are detailed in, 31.1 to 31.6. And they have to do mainly with bicycles, trails, pedestrian infrastructure, safe routes to school, and some other linkages and so on.
The reason we pick up more city representatives is because we add two counties. So, right. So we don't. The basic composition of the GEARS Committee stays the same. We're just picking up a couple of additional counties, which adds city members to the GEARS Committee.
As we continue on through the statute, it talks about the eligible uses for which the Joint Powers Board may use money, and the main purpose is the transitway development and operations, and also the GEARS grants. There is a specified grant, I guess, or transfer to Scott County and Carver County, and that's on 32.23. And this is in lieu of the current structure of minimum counties. In this situation, they're looking at Scott County and Carver County as producing less than 4% of the sales tax receipts. And anyway, this is a, as I understand it, the provision for Scott and Carver is the same as the provision that Washington County has had with the joint powers. And it also requires, besides those grants to Scott and Carver, there has to be a grant to the Met Council for Southwest Light Rail and Botineau Boulevard and to the Center for Transportation Studies for Transit Research. The remainder of Section 8 is pretty much as current law. But then Section 9 goes into detail about the allocation of the funds that are raised by the Metro sales tax. And the first call on the funds is payment of debt service on bonds. And then there's Metro Transit operations will be paid out of the tax. 100% of operating subsidies for the passenger or for light rail and commuter rail. The GEARS grants that I spoke of for bicycles and pedestrian infrastructure, Southwest Light Rail, and money to Center for Transportation Studies. So these will all be paid out of the Metro sales tax. And then any funds that are remaining will be subject to joint certification, where both the Met Council and the Joint Powers will have to work together to determine how that money should be divided. There is a dispute resolution process if they fail to come to agreement, And if all else fails, the legislature will appropriate the money to those two entities. The Met Council is directed with the funds that it receives from the sales tax to pay for bus and rail transit operations, and that is that's being cut. Now, that amount is being cut from their current general fund appropriation. So this will now come out of the sales tax. And they're also directed to expand our transit service according to their policy plans. And then there are administrative details, and there's a provision for the first half year. The council works on a calendar year basis, and by the time the sales tax is going to be imposed in July or in October, rather, but there won't be really revenues to spend, so there's provision for this interim period until the revenues start to flow from the metro sales tax. We're past that and moving on to Section 10. This is an existing section of law that was enacted along with the original metro sales tax, and this is an option for counties in greater Minnesota to impose a sales tax for transportation purposes up to a half cent. It has to be for a specific improvement. And the change that is included in Section 10 is that there is no longer a referendum requirement, but it can be imposed by the county board. Section 11.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Thanks, sorry. Senator Dibble.
Where's the chair?
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, when I raised the question this morning about the motor vehicle lease tax and was given the explanation of greater Minnesota Transit doesn't have any real resources, whereas the Metro were putting the quarter half-cent sales tax in. And now I'm hearing for the first time, just because I hadn't read the bill, I apologize, but that we're giving them the opportunity to raise local option sales tax without a referendum in their areas as well. So then it still doesn't seem like the change in the lease tax formula is a fair change.
Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Bonhoff. The ability for counties to raise the kind of revenue that they need, though, from the sales tax to fund transit would be fairly limited. The amount of sales that occur in some counties, I mean, we have some counties that have very, very small populations or very small retail activity. This is just another tool in the toolbox to provide either some matching dollars that's typically what occurs now anyways. The general fund appropriation that we make and the other sources that MnDOT administers that go to greater Minnesota transit purposes usually are complementary to other efforts that are going on locally. These are nonprofit agencies. There's some county property tax that's going in. This wouldn't provide sufficient revenue for greater Minnesota transit purposes. It would be complementary. But also bear in mind these are funds that can be used for a variety of transportation purposes as well. So they wouldn't all necessarily be going to greater Minnesota transit purposes. It could go for roads, bridges.
Discretionary.
Yeah, bike ped, safe routes to school.
Senator Bonhoff, any follow-up? You okay?
Yep, thanks.
Okay, thank you. You may continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then Section 11 on page 37, that also deals with the county option local sales tax, and it broadens the purposes for which the sales tax proceeds can be used in the greater Minnesota counties to include safe routes to school and also transit operating costs. Sections 12 and 13 go together, and the effect of these sections is to subject a gift transfer of a motor vehicle between individuals to MVES, the motor vehicle sales taxes. Those transfers are currently exempt, but the exemption is preserved for a gift transfer of a motor vehicle between spouses or between parent and child. Section 14 and along with Section 16, I'll kind of handle those together. Section 14 increases the rate of the motor vehicle sales tax. I believe that was discussed this morning, from 6.5% to 6.875. And then in Section 16, the distribution of the proceeds of MVEST are modified so that beginning July 1st, it still preserves the 60-40 split between 60 for the highways and 40 for transit, but the current out of the 40 for transit, the current 36-4, which is Metro Greater Minnesota, is changed to 35 for Metro and 5 for Greater Minnesota. And then, going back to Section 15, that increases the in-lieu tax, which is imposed instead of MVEST, on a transaction involving a collector automobile. That tax is increased from $90 to $150. Section 17 reduces the cap from 10% to 5% of the capital costs of a light rail transit or commuter rail project that the county regional railroad authority can pay. So it would be capped at 5%. And Section 18 is new language that establishes an optional idea for cities to impose adopt by ordinance this municipal street maintenance district. And maintenance is defined in the bill. Various maintenance type activities would be included. And the municipality may adopt an ordinance to charge a fee that would be uniform among classifications of real estate. And that money has to be used for street maintenance. It has to be pursuant to a plan that the municipality has adopted, and it has to be the proceeds have to be segregated and used only for that purpose. The street maintenance district lasts, depending on the ordinance, from 5 to 20 years, and it exempts institutions of public charity or property that's owned by institutions of public charity from having to pay this fee. Section 19 is the...
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The street maintenance districts that you just discussed, am I correct? There is no requirement in the statute to allow local voters to vote on it. It's strictly by... the establishment of an ordinance by the city council. Is that correct?
Testify.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, yes, that is correct.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, and this may be more of the author's question, but that exemption for public charities, I know we discussed that a little bit in committee, but ultimately we're How are the improvements in front of their buildings going to be paid for?
Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They would those improvements would have to be picked up by either the taxpayers or the other folks in the street maintenance district.
Senator Westrom, follow
Mr.
up?
Chair, Senator Dibble, that would be presumed the organization owned the building if they were leasing it. Assumedly, the owner of the building would not be exempt, even though they're leasing to a public charity, or would it qualify for that exemption as well?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, that is correct. The language reads, municipality may not impose a street maintenance fee on any parcel owned by an institution of public charity within the meaning of blah, blah, blah.
Senator Westrom, follow up? Okay. Senator Nee now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little unclear. I understand the concept, but I'm a little unclear
as to whether we're simply taking the current assessment system and distributing that over a larger tax base, or if this is something that's piling on top of that. Could you explain that a little bit better for me?
Ms. Berezovsky?
Berezovsky.
Berezovsky. There we go. Thank you, Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair and Senator Nino, there cannot be more than one street maintenance district that covers the same property, but the imposition of the street maintenance district does not preclude other means of financing.
Senator Nino?
So, Mr. Chair, thank you. So in my case, they a few years ago, they came through and they ripped everything up, put in new sewer, water, street, all of that, and I didn't have $15,000 cash, so they put the assessment on my property taxes every month. It goes up a little bit. Now, if we create a street maintenance district in my city, I would have that, and then potentially anyway, would have this, and they would have the ability to assess me for whatever they do day to day, as opposed to the big projects. Is that correct?
Ms. Berezovsky?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Nino, yes, I believe that is correct.
Senator Nino, follow up.
And if this becomes law and they do create a street maintenance district or whatever we're calling this, and I get that assessment every year, every quarter, however it's structured in here, if they come through in another 20 years and do that major renovation and rip my streets up again, am I going to still have this and then that large assessment piled on top of it as well, potentially, anyway? Or no? Or would that be prohibited?
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, well, for one thing, there is a sunset on this particular section that's 5 years out. But, assuming there were no sunset, you would be able to, yes, if the city had the authority to impose a special assessment if you had the benefit and so on, and if there still were the street maintenance district, yes, you could be paying both.
And it's my understanding that in this particular section that this would have to be authorized by a city in order for it to occur. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Any other questions? Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Berezovsky, I screwed that up even though I've been teasing him. I have a question about isn't the difference between an assessment and the street maintenance district the appeals process? Isn't that a significant difference that you are able to appeal? And correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is you're able to appeal under an assessment but not under this district.
Senator Dibble or Ms. Berezovsky?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, I believe that is correct. An assessment is for the specific identified construction, major renovation, major rehab project.
Senator Fischbach.
There is a public process by which the street maintenance fee is established, so in that sense there's a hearing process, et cetera. It's a fee that would be collected on an annual basis for mill and overlays, smaller scale sorts of maintenance efforts on the street that go on a fairly regular basis in a particular area. The idea, of course, is that proper maintenance of streets helps you avoid major renovations of streets. And that's proven to be so. If you're taking care of your streets in your cities, you can just do that, and you don't have to do the major digging them out, replacing the curb and gutter, dealing with the substructure, et cetera.
Senator Fischbach?
What you've got to have curb and gutter to upkeep it. So there is in a lot of the areas that I would represent, curb and gutter is not necessarily there already. So that you'd still have that major expense of curb and gutter. But I guess just without that appeal process that essentially lessens the ability of the citizens to deal with the fees that we're going to be imposing or could potentially be imposed by the city. So I just wanted to make that sure I had that straight. Thank you.
Senator Letts.
Mr. Chairman, apropos of nothing relating to the bill, I just got a text that they have the second bomber in custody.
Thank you.
Alive?
No, I believe so, yes.
I'm sorry. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator, I had a city council member call me and say, and warn me about this. I guess what he was doing was warning me about this. And he said, we're all paying taxes. We just have to wait our turn. I mean, I'm sure you've heard this story. It's, you know, when it's your turn to get your overlayment in your city. In your when you get your overlayment in Thief River Falls, Minnesota. Oh, no, I say, well, say Alexandria, you've been paying your taxes all along, and now you're going to give the city the authority. And I get that. The local control thing, I sometimes don't have a real problem with that. If they want to raise taxes on their own residents to do that, I don't sometimes have a problem with that because it kind of takes the – it's their decision, local decision. But if they've been paying now for a period of 15 years and it's their turn and all of a sudden they come along with this division development or division district taxing authority, and then all of a sudden not only is it your turn, but now you got to pay more. You got to pay actually a bigger share of the taxes that you've already been working and paying for the last 10 or 15 years. Is there any kind of a formula here, and maybe I'm missing it, a formula that in consideration of that particular, and maybe that's a city decision, is that particular street has not been overlaid for 15 years, and all of a sudden you got this taxing district? I don't know if you know where I'm going with this, but you've already paid 15 years in. It's your turn now, and then all of a sudden it's a taxing district, and you're going to have to pay more. Is there any consideration or thought at all in statute that would cover that, or is that what you're talking about when you talk about sunset?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a couple of, I think we addressed this in a couple of different ways. One is, there's a fairly specific definition of what maintenance activities are. Striping, seal coating, mill and overlay, reclamation, crack sealing, pavement repair, sidewalk maintenance, signal maintenance, street light maintenance, and signage. A city has to develop a plan that identifies the location, the estimated cost of the proposed maintenance during the proposed period, the fees, limiting it to a minimum of 5 and a maximum of 20 years for the particular district. The revenues from the street maintenance fees must be placed in a separate account and used only for projects located within the district and identified in the municipal street maintenance plan. So if your question, Senator Ingebrigtsen, is, will folks see a return? Will they be sure that they actually get these maintenance activities if they pay in? The answer is yes, they will. So they won't, just kind of pay in and just kind of have to wonder when on earth something's going to come by their front step and make some improvements that are needed. They'll know that sometime within 5 or, at most 20 years, stuff will be occurring in their area along their street. They're not paying money for no good reason.
Thank you.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yeah, just to follow up. I guess I wasn't very clear. I've been paying taxes for 12 years now, and it's my turn to get the overlayment. And all of a sudden, year 11, the city allows us to form this district, and I start paying into taxes when really, in fact, I was only a year away from getting my house work done in front of my house, and all of a sudden I'm paying in more. So I think I understand what it's about.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have questions that are along a similar line. I represent Minnetonka and Plymouth. Minnetonka has a system whereby they do all the maintenance as part of what we pay in taxes. Plymouth does assessments on roads, and that's a policy that the cities have created, and the residents kind of know what they get, and they understand what's in their taxes, what's not in their taxes, and I don't hear much about it. I am wondering why this is needed, given that, one of my cities already, has an assessment policy with regard to roads, and so what problem are we solving, given that the cities and counties do levy, and at this point, that's how things have been handled.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff. The simple problem that we're, first of all, this is optional for cities, so we're not requiring cities to do anything. You know, they can opt for it. We have literally many, many dozen cities, I think 75 or more cities that have signed on saying this is a tool that they could make use of because they don't have enough money. The assessment process doesn't work. The regular property tax, you know, property taxes of general applicability process don't work. They're just not able to. They're not able to keep up with, and so it's a kind of a more rational basis by which, you know, they can construe an area that's going to receive a steady diet of good maintenance activities to avoid what a lot of cities have run into, which is, you know, that tipping point that they run into because they don't have, they're not able to program those regular dollars. You know, cities have their ability to generate property taxes or assessments are widely varied for all kinds of different historic reasons. The value of their housing, the lack of commercial industrial, their geographic proximity, all that stuff. So cities have all kinds of different abilities to do for themselves what they need to do. That's why we have local government aid and we have other kinds of programs to recognize those differences. And so they say if they're able to generate what would typically be a fairly small amount on an annual basis so they could get to those maintenance activities, mill and overlay, the tar and gravel, you know, those sorts of things, then they avoid the kind of deterioration of the road surface that then allows for the deterioration of the substructure that then necessitates, then becomes the tipping point, necessitates the major rehab, which then really throws them over the line.
Senator Bonhoff, any other follow-up or any other questions on Section 18? Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, just in response to Senator Bonhoff and Senator Fischbach, a concern I have, Senator Bonhoff, kind of relates to this because the assessment process now at least has a connection to the value of the cost of the improvement equaling the value to the property. This has no correlation. So a $5,000 or $10,000 assessment would have to at least benefit the property that much or more. This could be a $5,000 or $10,000 assessment and only benefit the property $500 or nothing potentially, but there's no connection. And that's the appeals process that I'm a little concerned with, that the taxpayers aren't going to have a way to go to the city and say, wait a minute here, we don't want a $10,000 assessment or a cost that just comes in our monthly utility bill, and we have no way to appeal it or at least have you show that there's going to be a benefit equal to our property. So to both of your points, that is a concern that I still share with this, and I think our taxpayers will hear about it. We will hear about it after somebody gets a property or a cost for an improvement that doesn't match. And I had a city in my district that tried to assess the whole town for fixing up one side of the town, and they literally got away with it until the appeals process worked, and that was their way of challenging it. But that is a concern.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, that's not entirely true, because there is a plan is required to be established. There has to be conformity to that plan with estimated costs. There's notice of public hearing for the proposed plan is mailed to everyone ahead of time. There's a hearing. It's posted. The plan has to be presented. There has to be opportunity for comment. Et cetera. It's on like I said before, on a time-limited basis. And then, of course, we have municipal elections, which is another mechanism that folks can express themselves.
Thank you. All right, Senator Dibble, I think we can move on to section – oh, Senator Nienau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Berezovsky, you said there's a five-year sunset.
Senator Dibble? Is it?
That's okay. A subdivision 10, excuse me, it's in the effective date, 43.24.
Okay.
Senator Nienau.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking back on page 42. It's 42.24, you said?
43.24.
Oh, okay.
The effective date of the section.
Follow-up, Senator Nino?
Mr. Chair, I'm looking on 42.24, where it's requiring adoption of a plan, and they have to have a proposed collection of fees for at least 5 years and at most 20 years. So if they go forward with a plan with a 20-year repayment schedule, if this sunsets in 5 years, there's 15 years left. How does this work?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, that the sunset simply means that no city can establish a new street maintenance district. So, you know, on so it expires on June 30th, 2018. On June 29th, 2018, they could establish a street maintenance.
Senator Nino.
That would last so, from 5 to 20 years.
So the taxing authority isn't sunsetted. It's a 5-year period in which they can create this taxing district, for whatever we call it. And after 5 years, they can't create new ones. Is that a correct understanding?
That's correct. Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Senator Nino, that's correct.
Senator Nino.
And Mr. Chair, so then if, for example, the city I live in, Cambridge, were to establish this district, that would extend until such time as they pass a resolution dissolving those districts, that district or those districts. Is that the way that would work?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nino, the districts are time limited to 20 years.
Okay, Mr. Chair, just clarification. So a city could create a district. That district could exist for 20 years, and then they would cease to exist, and unless current laws changed, they wouldn't be able to create any more because the law sunsetted 15 years prior.
Senator Dibble.
So, Mr. Chair, maybe Senator Westrom, it was his idea to do the sunset. He could answer your questions more precisely, but I think that's true.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, well, it brings up one other question that I bring up on occasion. I remember having a similar argument with the – well, I don't need to go there. One concern this poses for me is, for the most part, no city official who would be voting on this resolution, city council member, mayor, would have been elected with this particular taxing authority, and we would be granting it to them. And they would potentially could be taking on 20 years of debt repayment that's not able to be undone via election. I always raise concern, I try to anyway, raise concern when I see those circumstances, because what we have effectively done then is circumvented the electorate. When I elected my city council members and mayor, I certainly didn't ask them, would you vote to create a municipal street maintenance taxing district? Because that authority didn't exist for them. I never had the ability to ask that question. Is my understanding correct that the city of Cambridge, for example, where I live, if they created this, this street maintenance district, could come up with a plan for a 20-year maintenance plan and take on a 20-year debt, basically, that I'd have to be paying for and couldn't be undone through the ballot box? Or am I wrong?
Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nino, it's a good question. I don't know that I don't know if these – maybe Ann Finn can help. I don't know if the definition of these maintenance activities, cities would necessarily bond for those activities because they're not major capital, major capital undertakings. I think this would be kind of cash, pay as you go for things like striping, seal coating, et cetera. So I think they could remedy if they really hate it, they're paying too much or they're not getting what they want, they could remedy it, you know, by – marching on City Hall or unelecting the knuckleheads who did it. I don't know if it's even if these are even bondable resources. Ms. Finn, do you know?
Ms. Finn, would you identify yourself for the record and welcome to the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. And Representative Nino, or Senator Nino, I apologize. The idea behind the 20-year lifespan of the district is that it would be funding a maintenance, a pavement management plan. And really the way that our cities work is they do try and have predictions out that far for how they're going to maintain their pavement citywide. And I think they can do some bonding for that, but we would envision this tool being used as kind of a pay-as-you-go mechanism.
Senator Nino, any other additional questions for the testifier?
Just for clarification, so that's not what the league and others would envision, but it would be, at least in some circumstances, completely possible.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nino,
Senator,
yes.
Ms. Finn. All right. Thank you. Senator Engelbretson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly, with this, the league sitting here represented, was there talk of a similar concern that Senator Ninal has with regards to elections about
Inga
having this not go into effect until after the next general election for city council? Now, I know they stagger. I think they stagger two and three. That to me would seem to be something that I would would entertain as a thought. I don't know, was it ever talked about at all? Not make this effect until at least after the election of whether it's two or three, so they could weigh in on that before you give them the authority to go ahead and all of them go ahead and vote for it.
Ms. Finn,
Mr. Chair and Senator Engelbretson, we have not had that conversation, and you know. City councils make all kinds of decisions with authority that they have, like, you know, imposing recycling fees or creating a stormwater utility. So this is modeled after other authority that city officials are already implementing.
Senator Bonoff.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, but thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could, just a follow-up. But this is new. I mean, this is a taxing authority in the city. I've never heard of it. I guess I did express myself earlier with regards to lake associations having their own taxing authority, but it's somewhat different, certainly somewhat different, and that's been around for some time. But isn't this something really brand new to city councils, this proposal?
Ms. Finn?
Mr. Chair and Senator Engelbretson, this specific tool is new. It has been used in some other states, but again, it's modeled after authority that cities are already using. We have authority to implement sidewalk utilities, as I mentioned, stormwater. There are other kinds of fees that cities collect right now, and it's similar.
Excuse me, just really quickly, just for blocks, they have that authority now, just small areas of the city, or is it just spread over the whole city?
Ms. Finn.
Mr. Chair and Senator Engelbretson, I would think it's probably citywide, and what a number of our cities have told us is that they would probably implement this as a citywide, especially in our smaller communities, they would implement it as a citywide fee. That said, there may be some older cities that want to divide it into quadrants or do something similar so that they can handle the condition of different pavement based on when it was built.
Senator Bonoff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, did you consider the notion of an appeals process? I think what you're hearing is people just, you know, wanting to make sure there's checks and balances with the new program. Was that brought forward? Did anyone suggest it? And did you vote on that at any point?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff. This was developed largely by Senator Carlson, and he worked pretty hard. It was a much larger idea at one time. It's been scaled back quite significantly. From its original conception. I think at one time it would have included major capital efforts, reconstruction, and the like. It's significantly scaled back to simple maintenance. I wasn't privy to some, you know, we didn't have that conversation in committee about appeals. And I don't know what the conversations were in the office, I think that the committee was satisfied with, you know, this adoption, these adoption provisions that you find in subdivision 4, making sure that a plan is developed, there's appropriate notice, there are cost estimates of what the fee will be, hearing, et cetera.
Senator Bonoff?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to ask Ms. Finn if she could just comment on the appeals process idea.
Ms. Finn?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, I guess I wouldn't entirely object to the language that did that, but one of the things that we're trying to do with this is to limit how much cities are spending on litigation or other kinds of procedural things as it pertains to collecting the fees. Right now, one of the weaknesses of the special assessment system is that some cities are spending, you know, a third of their budget for the project on just estimating the benefit and then litigating when a property owner wants to appeal. And even if the city wins, they're still out that money.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Senator Dibble or either of the testifiers, when I read through the section 18, it very consistently talks about street maintenance districts, and in particular subdivision 4, the adoption of a plan talks about street maintenance. Does this section authorize just maintenance of existing streets, or does it authorize new projects, new streets, new sewer and water, those types of things?
Senator Dibble.
Existing. Open to correction, but yeah, I think it's just simply for existing infrastructure, stuff that's already in place to be maintained.
Follow up, Senator Newman.
That answers my question. Thank you.
Senator Neal now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I represent an area that is a mix of city and rural, and I have some cities that have merged with townships, and so the township is now the city. And there's a lot of, I won't say unimproved, but underimproved roads there. Could this potentially be used to, for lack of a better word, upgrade those if we have gravel roads to upgrade them to tar, or if we have tar roads that are not current standard to upgrade them to that? What I'm wondering is this going to be could it become tempting for the city to start doing all kinds of projects that they wouldn't have normally because they didn't want to raise the general levy and upgrading to newer, better roads rather than just seal coating and striping? Would that be possible?
Senator Nina, I didn't hear if you wanted Senator Dibble or Ms. Finn to answer that question.
Whoever can give me the best answer, Mr. Chair.
I'll start with Senator Dibble.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator, not. I don't think so. I think we've answered that question previously. It defines what maintenance is. Maintenance means striping, seal coating, mill and overlay, reclamation, crack sealing, et cetera. And then it authorizes the purposes for which these dollars can be used, tying back to that definition of maintenance. Mr. Chair and Senator now members. I think this is a pretty interesting reform because, you know, it establishes kind of upfront a plan, anticipated costs, a lot of transparency and disclosure notice, and, you know, some fairly transparent measures of accountability. The fees have to be placed in a separate account and used only for projects located within the district, et cetera. So, to Ms. Finn's earlier point, it helps ameliorate a lot of kind of administrative overhead that occurs sometimes with street transportation services. It helps cities get on a fairly rational and consistent, easily to anticipate maintenance program to avoid some of these larger costs. You know, it creates a measure of accountability for the dollars. You don't have Senator Ingebrigtsen's constituents sitting around who are paying just general property taxes wondering when the heck streets in their vicinity are going to be improved. So it's a pretty interesting idea. It allows cities to raise resources that they haven't been able to raise on a fairly easily to anticipate basis to provide a program of services over a period of years to keep up their streets. It's highly accountable, highly transparent. You can draw a direct line from the money you pay to the activities you see around you.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. I think we're ready to go to Section 19.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 19 provides for for the Metropolitan Council Regional Bonding Authority in the amount of $35,800,000. That is to implement its transit capital program and for related costs. And that is backed by a property tax in the transit taxing district.
Mr. Chair, that's something that's boilerplate that we do every year. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. That's boilerplate language that we do every year to give the Met Council their authority to do their standard capital bonding for, you know, bus fleet replacement and that sort of thing.
Mr. Chair, Section 20 is revenue bond authority for the council, and that is in connection with the new sales tax, the new metro area sales tax that we discussed earlier. Section 21 extends the sunset for the statutory appropriation of federal economic recovery funds. I think Ms. Boyd mentioned this morning that there is some new federal money that's coming in under this program, and so the sunset is extended out to 2016. Article 3 is...
I'm sorry. I think Senator Engelbrechtson has a question for you.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much, and I apologize for not being here. Before you get out of this section, if I could ask a question with regards to Section 3.
Yes.
I wasn't here yet with regards to, so I could understand the gross receipt tax. I'm assuming you went over that. I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, is it possible to have some testimony at all during this? Would you like to have somebody come up from the retail side or the wholesale side?
I would like to do, if it's okay with you, she did explain that in some detail earlier. I would like for her to complete going through the bill, and we could easily go back to that particular section if that's okay, Senator.
It was this section. I just didn't want to know if you didn't want to move ahead. So.
That's it.
I'm sorry, article. I'm confused with articles and sections. It was in this article, but that's fine. We'll wait.
Senator Dibble, I'm open, but let me ask Senator Dibble what his pleasure is, because he's the author.
Ms. Chair, and I always follow my chair's lead.
So, well, you know what?
So either way, I mean, if we want to spend some time on the gross receipts tax now, that's perfectly fine.
You know, I will do that just so that we can, you know, keep some level of consistency here. So, Senator Engelbrechtson, would you like for her to, first of all, to go back over that particular?
Just that one section, Mr. Chair. I believe it's Section 3 right in there, the gross receipts, the whole gross receipts. I'm sorry, page 24.
Okay.
And I do have somebody... Could explain exactly how he sees this coming forward. I think you may have had the testimony,
Senator Dibble, in your committee. I have not heard this testimony. It's a fairly significant tax change, and I'm just wondering if you would be so willing to allow him to come up and talk about it.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, absolutely, Senator.
His name is Kevin Poma, if you would come forward.
And I am on the Transportation Committee. We did hear from this particular testifier, but for the record, because I know that there's some who are not on the Transportation Committee, if you will identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman.
And welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Toma, and I work for the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. And we are the association that represents the wholesale, licensed wholesale distributors in the state of Minnesota. We will be the folks that would be responsible right now for collecting the 5.5 gross receipts tax.
And proceed with your testimony.
The question.
Unless you have a question, Senator Engelbrechtson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I suppose I should ask a question here. Senator Dibble, there's going to be a reduction in the sales tax, but it's going to be reflected back, I understand, into the to the gross receipts tax. Could you explain to me, maybe Mr. Thoma can explain what kind of a problem that's going to be for him, if it is in fact going to be a problem, or just explain how that's going to work and how members of his business community are going to be affected by that, just so I totally understand before we move forward.
Senator Dibble, or to the testifier?
Senator Engelbrechtson, as you probably know, the like you said, the gas tax is reduced from 25 cents to 19 cents per gallon. a new what we call gross receipts tax that's collected at the wholesale level of 5.5% of price would be collected, it would be construed in terms of how we expend those dollars. It would be constitutionally dedicated, as Ms. Berezovsky said. So it would go into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, similar to how the gas tax goes in now, and then it would come out in the CASA formula, et cetera, the gas tax on the excise tax on per gallon comes out now.
Okay.
It'd be collected on a quarterly basis.
So it's collected on a quarterly basis.
Right, on the gross receipts of of sales to eligible or to those users that are not exempt.
Thank you, and Mr. Thoma, how is
Senator?
This?
Senator Engelbrechtson, could you be so kind as to make sure that you go through the chair, please?
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
Senator?
Mr. Chair, thank you. If I could ask the testifier, what's that going to do to your business?
Mr. Thoma.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I'd like to share with you a calculation on how it would affect our members. And the calculation that I'll use is the one that you would typically see as you're driving around in Minnesota. The tanker truck that you see that says Quick Trip Super America Holiday contains about 8,500 gallons of gas. And right now, today, our cost on fuel at wholesale level without any taxes, without any freight, is $2.81. So the total cost of that tanker load would be $23,885. If you multiply that by the new gross receipts tax of 5.5%, you get $1,313.67. When you divide the $1,313.67 by the 85 gallons that's on that tanker, you come up with a total of $1,15455, which equivalates to 15.455 cents per gallon in the gross receipts tax. So what our members will be forced to do will be to add that 15.455 cents to the gallon of gas, and then the federal tax, and then our freight, and then our state tax, and then our markup.
Any questions?
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Dibble.
I don't want to get into a huge math dispute, we've calculated, and we have forecasts and the like, that we've worked with our staff on. And so, I don't want to get into a big contest here, but the net effect, you have to remember that we're subtracting 6 cents per gallon off the price of gas. But if we were to actually just have what our goal was to raise something north of $225 million per year for the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, and that's what we achieved with our calculation and our forecasts. If you were to equate that to a per gallon tax that you would pay by the consumer at retail, it'd be somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 plus cents per gallon. That's and a number of folks have arrived at that calculation independently. That being said, it may well be passed on to the consumer. That's not mandated or required. That's a decision that the distributor and the purchasers can make independently of us. But also, this is a significant reform in how we collect and construe our what a lot of folks like to call our user fee for transportation. We know for a fact, even if we were to raise the 7.5 cents per gallon at the retail level, that would not keep up with our needs. It would, immediately, become a declining, almost to de minimis new source because of a whole bunch of different reasons. We know that
vehicle miles traveled are going down, cars are becoming more efficient, et cetera, et cetera. So we're trying to enact some level of reform in how we collect transportation taxes, and this achieves some of that.
I believe that Senator Fischbach had a question.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, or the testifier. Lots of numbers, but from what you said, it will on a gallon of gas, it raises it seven and a half cents, and you will raise an additional $225 million by making this switch. So we will be bringing into the state $225 million new dollars. Is that, am I understanding it?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, correct.
Thank you.
Senator Nino.
On that question, just to clarify, is that $225 for the biennium or per year?
Per year. But it kind of ramps up, Mr. Chair, excuse me. So it's not $225 right away, but in the next biennium, it would achieve that level of effort.
Senator Nino.
Okay. Well, just to go with that for the sake of discussion, we'd be actually not talking about $225. We'd be talking about $450 for a budget.
Correct.
Okay. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, correct.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is on a different, related but different tax. So I don't, if anyone else has questions on this particular piece, I don't want
to
jump
in. Would you be so kind as to wait until we get to that particular place? Because I did tell Senator Engelbretson that I wanted to make sure that we were consistent. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, actually, I think your math and Mr. Tuma's math isn't that far apart. If you used your formula and subtracted out, taking account the 6 cents, you say 9 cents a gallon, you're at 7 cents. It seems like you're not that much apart.
Is that a question for Senator Dibble?
Mr. Tuma, because you said, you know, the 15 cents and then you were adding everything back in, but then if you take into account that we're taking 6 cents away, I'm not having a value judgment. I'm just stating that it seems like really what we're talking about is in the neighborhood of what Senator Dibble said.
Senator Engelbretson.
Mr. Chair, if I could have the testifier answer that question, I think it's quite a bit more than that, at least through his figures, and maybe we can just end it there because I know you've had these discussions before, but it's quite a bit more than 7 cents a gallon.
Mr. Toma.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, one thing that you have to keep in mind with this is that when the wholesale price goes up, because this is a percentage and not locked in pennies, that number goes up as well. So I don't think I'll run afoul of any antitrust laws today by telling you this, but the new rack average is no longer $2.81. The new rack average is $2.89 today because we had a increase in wholesale cost. So if you add that to my scenario, you're looking at adding another half a cent. So now instead of 15.44, it's going to be at the 16-cent level. So depending upon what day you take the wholesale number and calculate it, you'll get a different number. If we see gasoline get up to $3.80, you'll see that number getting higher yet. On the reverse of that, if we see gas at $1.79, that number will become 6 cents, and then we'll be looking for funds that way as well.
Okay. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is on this point. Well, that's an interesting point of clarification, I think, that's maybe more pertinent to the Transportation Committee, but certainly to the Finance Committee, in that because it's a percentage, we will have volatility in that price. Now, in recent years, we've certainly seen some steady increasing in prices, but it wasn't that long ago that we saw some really significant decreases. The Gulf War and all of that, when counterintuitively we saw gas and oil prices dropping precipitously, and by having a percentage at the wholesale price, we're going to see that volatility probably more up, but potentially also down as well. I just think it's a point worth noting.
Senator Stump.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the if we took a look at trucks buying fuel, if you purchased I want to be able to state the question. Interstate travel, does this process negate their ability to translate this into a mileage? I don't know if they call it a certificate or.
Senator Stump, is that for any particular testifiers?
For Mr. Tuma, is it?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, that's a kind of a trucking industry issue, which we did have some conversation about at our hearing. And there's the kind of the IFTA regimen or IFTA agreement. What does that stand for again?
International Fuel Tax Agreement.
Yeah, the International Fuel Tax Agreement. Trucks who are traveling, from state to state, they can kind of allocate their mileage, and then there's a reconciliation process. We're figuring out right now exactly. You know, a number of other states already have this, so it's not like we invented this whole idea. And I think to the extent that a wholesaler can show that they've passed those costs along to the trucker, it can kind of be put into that mix, and then everyone can reconcile and be kept whole. So, it's a record-keeping matter.
Senator Stump, any follow-up?
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering, how does that process work I would imagine right now all they do is take their receipt with them and, record it. Would this mean something similar to that? Or
Senator DeBoe?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, I don't know with great precision what exactly the mechanism of the process. I know MnDOT's been looking at it. Mr. Peterson has a little bit more information because we talked about it in the hallway. Was that yesterday or today? It all blends together. they administer that IFTA program out of it's out of DPS, but they know how it works. If you want some detail about how that works exactly, they can come to the table.
Senator Stump or Senator Engelbreit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that brings up a good point. Senator Nino talked about the volatility here of the dollars coming into the state, Senator Dibble. I'm wondering if it wouldn't be more stable to stay with a known tax as being in charge of the budget, as we all are. If the gas were to go down, obviously, these dollars are not going to come in that you budgeted into your budget here. So the stability of a sales tax versus taxing what now has been described as a what could go up and what could go down type market. If it goes up, I guess the state stands to make more money, although I'm assuming that Mr. Oma is going to say that he's going to pass it on to the consumer, so the consumer is going to pay one way or the other. I guess that would be my final question, and I'll let it go. What are you going to the testifier? Are you going to pass this on to the consumer, or do you think you can possibly put this into your business model?
Mr. Toma.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I own three small convenience stores in southwest Minnesota, and I sell about 2.5 million gallons of gasoline a year. And if you take 2.5 million gallons of gasoline times $2.81, which is the current rack, and then multiply that by the 5.5 gross receipts tax, you'd come up with a total of $386,375. The most I've ever made in convenience store business in one given year was $48,000.
Mr. Toma, I'm waiting for you to answer his question. Are you going to pass that on to the consumer? Was the senator's question.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, sorry. Yes, I would have to pass the $386,000 on.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Just one response to the policy comment. We know for a fact the gas tax, as we raise it now, it just isn't working.
We need some reform, and we need some new ideas. This is a new idea. It is volatile as it is today, as we construe it today. There's no doubt about that. We also know that if we stick with it, even if we raise it a little bit at the, you know, at the per gallon basis at the retail end, you know, it'll just evaporate because it doesn't keep pace with inflation. There will be some measure of volatility. We have huge volatility in the motor vehicle sales tax, for example. But I think overall, you know, the trend will be much more stable, and it'll allow for some growth in our transportation resources, so we don't get to this dire circumstance that we're in. You know, every on a predictable cycle of you know 10 or so years, where we're just simply not, you know, we can criticize ideas all day long, but. We're not keeping up with our transportation investment needs in this state, and other states are going right past us as we sit here.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. Thank you, Mr. Toma, for your testimony. And I believe that we are going to be at Article 3.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 3 begins with new language establishing a Corridors of Commerce program. This is a program that would be run and administered by MnDOT, and the idea would be to improve trunk highways that are important to freight movement and that may have capacity issues, so that they can be upgraded through this program. There's a lot of language about project eligibility and selection criteria and so on, but. There are the idea is that I believe that this would be supported by bonding from trunk highway revenues.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Dibble,
and members, there's a map and a chart just to give folks some ideas of the kinds of projects that could be eligible. Under a Corridors of Commerce initiative like this.
Thank you, Senator.
Around the state.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Steven.
Senator Dibble, I'm just looking over the language, and so would a separate corridor receive a grant every cycle, or is that not specified? Would at least one project occur in all of the 8 districts, I guess I'm wondering, cycle, or how is that determined?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair and members, yeah, I don't think every district around the state is guaranteed to have a project necessarily, but the projects are initiated, you know they're nominated, if you will, or initiated at the district level, you know, working in conjunction, of course, with local communities.
Senator Sieben, follow up.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, could you just comment on then, because there's somewhat more demand in the metro county and it's a big district in terms of the amount of dollars that are needed to do some of these projects and really high traffic corridors, for example, how does that competition, because the competition getting to the projects that
Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, it's kind of a hard question to answer because, you know, we try not to, you know, tie the hands too much of the commissioner. Understand that, you know, significant new resources will be coming into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund and into the state road construction program. Not all these new dollars would be going into the Corridors of Commerce. A significant number of them would be. Our ability, of course, our ability to bond with Trunk Highway Fund dollars would be significantly improved. Right now, we're almost at the cap of our bonding capacity in our Trunk Highway Fund. We have that kind of 20% threshold in our funding cliff that results from kind of achieving all that capacity that we have to do additional work that came out of 2008 and the Chapter 152
is kind of staring us straight in the face. So I don't know how to answer your question with precision other than, you know, there's going to be significantly more resources. You know, whether one or more of these projects will be in the metro versus, you know, of course, the one we talk about a lot down in the District 6 and 7, Highway 14, or other places. You know, I don't know the answer to that question necessarily. You know, a lot of this is going to be about engagement and making the case that, you know, the criteria that are established in terms of economic improvement, safety improvement, freight movement, et cetera, are really strong.
Thank you. Any follow-ups, Senator Sieben? All right. You may continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, Article 3, Section 2 is a section of statute that defines which expenditures out of the Trunk Highway Fund are not allowed, and the Trunk Highway Fund is limited by the state constitution to being used for trunk highway purposes, which are construction, improvement, and maintenance of trunk highways. So the existing law lists a number of purposes for which the expenditure of trunk highway funds would be inappropriate. This section, it strikes tort claims so that that would no longer be against this this law to fund out of trunk highway, but it adds as an impermissible purpose that would payments to minute services in excess of actual costs incurred for trunk highway purposes. The next section has to do with research money that the Commissioner of Transportation is allowed to set aside from funds appropriated to the Commissioner, and it increases the cap on funds that the Commissioner may spend for research activities performed by the University of Minnesota Center for Transportation Studies. The current maximum that can be spent is $1.2 million, and this would raise the cap to $2 million. And it also prescribes certain types of research that the center will have to undertake on transportation policy and economic competitiveness. Section 4 is the section of law that that apportions the CASA, or County State Aid Highway Fund. And this changes things around a bit because it adds money from the new gross receipts tax, and it has to change some of the numbers that have to do with the gasoline tax as to how much goes into the new excess sum and how much goes into the older apportionment fund. So that's the reason for changing those numbers. Section 5 changes the threshold for the definition of high-value vehicle. This is in the Motor Vehicle Titles chapter of law, and it has to do with the requirements for obtaining a salvage title for damaged vehicles. Section 6 is a change in title fees, and it does not go into effect until 2017. When the Department of Public Safety will have its new computer system online. It eliminates the title transfer fee, and it raises the initial title issuance fee. Section 7 is a provision
Excuse me one second. Senator Fischbach?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I was just curious, does that change in the title fees bring in dollars? I mean, do you raise... You flip it enough that it raises additional dollars.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair and Senator Fischbach, it does, of course, not until 2017. And it's not a lot, but... all right. So in 2017, it raises about $16,000 in general fund. And then it raises about $33,000 in special revenue driver services funds.
Thank you. Section 7?
Section 7 is an initiative that has to do with annual permits for overweight vehicles, and this is taking an existing permit that is available for transportation of certain farm products, while raw or unprocessed agricultural products. That is broadened to include all freight, and so an annual permit would be available for these trucks as are described in this section. And also, it adds language at 51.2829 that a six-axle vehicle that is overweight within the limits prescribed in this subdivision can be operated on the interstate only if it is transporting sealed intermodal containers and it is part of an international movement. And that is not available for the seven-axle vehicles. There are a number of sections coming up that were part of an initiative that a bill that is on the Senate floor now. It's a Senator Tomasoni bill, and it has to do with, a lot of it has to do with criminal vehicular operation and driver's license suspension, reinstatement, and so on, and also ignition interlock, so that people who are convicted of criminal vehicular operation that is DWI related will go on the ignition interlock program, so that they can continue to drive, but with that program overseeing their driving. There are also provisions in the Senator Tomasoni bill that allow an employee to drive an employer-owned vehicle if the employee is on the ignition interlock program, but the vehicle does not necessarily have that equipment and it does not have to have the specially coded plates. And there are certain restrictions on that ability to drive the employer's vehicle. moving ahead to Section 11, this is a driver's education initiative that would allow for concurrent education between classroom instruction and behind-the-wheel instruction. It gives rulemaking authority to the commissioner. And then in Section 12, there is a newly established Novice Driver Education Improvement Task Force, and this is a task force where a lot of the commissioner and then a lot of the stakeholders that are listed on page 56 would participate in this. And their job would be to look at our state laws and rules concerning driver education and compare them with national standards and determine whether our state laws and rules should be updated to conform with national standards.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Dibble, if we could go back to the rulemaking authority of the commissioner at line 23, page 55, line 23.
Is that Section 11?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Newman, continue.
Senator Dibble, what is the reason for exempting this rulemaking authority from Chapter 14?
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Senator Newman, I don't actually know the answer to that question. I don't know if you recall. This is a Senator Dahl provision. I think,
Mr. Chairman, normally there is rulemaking of, sort of the normal rulemaking, and then there's expedited rulemaking. And recently we saw a bill with the health exchange where there was what I call super expedited rulemaking. Rulemaking, generally provides for public notice and public input and that type of thing. And I'm just curious as to why we would not go through normal rulemaking process for something as frankly innocuous as classroom instruction for for a driver education program.
Senator Dibble?
And if you don't know Senator Dibble, that's fine. Maybe you could get back to me.
Mr. Yes. Chair, I don't know. I would, if I gave you an answer, I'd just be kind of guessing.
So it sounds like that Senator Dibble wouldn't mind having Senator Dahl get back with you about that
that would be
provision.
Perfectly acceptable, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Mr. Chair, yeah, this was heard in Senator Pappas' committee, and I think this provision was added there. So maybe
it
Senator
was.
Pappas knows, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to ask that question about whether it was heard in my division, because if you're exempting rules, then typically you would have to do that.
Oh, Mr.
You think we heard it there?
Oh, Mr. Chair, yeah. Right. Yeah,
Senator Dibble.
This provision went to all the places it was supposed to go.
So then it sounds like Senator Newman is okay with us just having a note to have Senator Dahl just chat with him about it.
55.
That's my understanding.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is acceptable.
All right. So can we move on to Section 12? Or Section 13. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, these next sections are part of the Senator Tomasoni bill that I described a few minutes ago. So
okay.
If we could, there's actually quite a few of them. I think all the way to Section 20.
Section 20, okay.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And that establishes a transportation economic development program. And this is a program that would be jointly administered by the Commissioners of Transportation and Employment and Economic Development. So the idea would be to provide assistance to projects through competitive grants, all modes of transportation, and there would be two separate accounts that would be set up, one for trunk highway funds and one for general funds, so that there could be a combination of trunk highway improvements with the additional economic development activities that would be involved, and the criteria and administration and so on are set out in new language, and there is a reporting requirement. Then Section 21 is a provision that requires MnDOT on major trunk highway projects to utilize a pavement material that has a design life of at least 20 years. Section 22 is part of the Safe Routes to School program, and there is already a provision in statute relating to this and relating to infrastructure and bonding purposes. But in this new language, it details activities that are non-infrastructure related to encourage walking and biking to school that the commissioner may accomplish with a specific appropriation for those purposes. Section 23.
Hold on. I'm sorry. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just going back to Section 21, the required using a pavement material that has a design life of at least 20 years. Is there a short list of those materials? What would that be? I'm just wondering, are we narrowing it down to one, or are there 50?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nino, that's concrete.
So it would be just one. Mr. Chair.
Senator Nino.
So it would be just that. That was my inference. I didn't know that, though I don't serve in the Transportation Committee, but that's what I inferred from that. Thank you.
All right. Continue.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, and maybe I'm incorrect, Senator Dibble might. Senator Peterson, I think that's his provision, and I had talked to him, and he said asphalt also has a design life of 20, but it may mean that they have to put a thicker layer on than they currently do. So do you recall that, Senator Dibble, or am I maybe confusing two things here?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, that could be, and that stands to reason, sitting here, if I think about it, sure, really thick asphalt.
And it is true that this is a Senator Peterson's amendment as well.
Right. So might be something we want to follow up with him on, or Senator Nino, if you want, as well.
Sounds good.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 23 has to do with money left in the account, in the grade crossing safety account administered by MnDOT, and this would allow the Commissioner of Transportation to cancel the money back to the Trunk Highway Fund at the end of the biennium rather than necessarily at the end of each fiscal year at the Commissioner's discretion. Section 24 has to do with youth intervention programs, and it provides that the Programs Association may spend up to 5% of appropriations for this purpose rather than the current 1%, and it expands the duties that they are required to perform. Section 25 is part of the Capital Security Initiative, and this requires a new position to be created of emergency manager, and it specifies the duties and other meetings and so on that need to be held relating to capital security. Section 26 also relates to security in the Capitol complex, and it clarifies that the Commissioner of Public Safety has final authority regarding public safety and security in the Capitol complex, whereas admin has powers that relate to administrative oversight of Capitol complex state-owned buildings. Section 27 is a modification of current statute under which the Commissioner of Public Safety, pursuant to interagency agreements, contracts out certain security services for agencies in the Capitol complex, and fees are collected and retained by the department. This would allow the Commissioner of Public Safety to deal directly with the agency tenants in the Capitol complex through interagency agreements, charge fees for security, and retain those funds in a special revenue fund that is then appropriated back out to the commissioner. Section 28 is in the Regional Railroad Authority chapter of law, and this expands the authority of a regional rail authority in the metro area to develop bus rapid transit systems. Section 29 defines the word project in the section of law that relates to what that 5% cap that we talked about a little while ago, what a regional rail authority can contribute to the capital cost of a new project. And this specifies what project means and what it doesn't mean. It does not include infill stations, project enhancements, extensions, and support of infrastructure that is constructed after the rail transit is operational. The next two sections, 30 and 31, are part of the Senator Tomasoni bill.
Mr. Chair. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, could I get a little more explanation on Section 30?
Section 30.
It's the criminal vehicular operation and manslaughter. I guess, you know, violated Section 609.21. I guess I'm not, don't know it off the top of my head.
Testify.
Mr. Chair and Senator Fischbach, this relates to a DWI-related criminal vehicular operation violation, and Senator Latz can correct me if I'm wrong about that, but my understanding of this section is that it requires the peace officer who finds probable cause to believe that there has been a DWI-related CVO, criminal vehicular operation violation, to notify the Commissioner of Public Safety, which would then trigger the driver's license suspension.
Thank you.
Section 32, this is permissive language. It allows Metropolitan Council in a transitway project to work with local community-based organizations to promote community engagement along the corridor. Section 33 is also permissive language, and it encourages a lead transportation authority in an infrastructure project to make every effort to employ women, minorities, contract with women-owned and minority-owned targeted group businesses and so on. And it also encourages the Commissioner of Transportation to increase participation in highway projects for small businesses located around the state in economically disadvantaged areas. Section 34 is a provision that allows MnDOT to pay its assistance for the Greater Minnesota Transit component of North Star directly to a recipient outside of the metropolitan area instead of having to funnel it through the Metropolitan Council. So the current program requires the recipient to be in the metropolitan area. Section 35 is the repealer, and there are three repealers. One repeals the language of the existing Trunk Highway Economic Development Account because it is superseded by this double account TED program, Transportation Economic Development, that's jointly administered by the two commissioners. It repeals the June 30, 2014 expiration date for the Minnesota Council on Transportation Access, allowing it to continue its work. And finally, it repeals Department of Public Safety rules that relate to suspension and revocation of driver's licenses for criminal vehicular operation offenses. Much of the content of those rules is now in statute. And finally, Article 4 is severability, and it provides that if the gross receipts tax on fuel distributors is found to be invalid, then the sections that lower the gasoline and fuel taxes and adjust the county state aid highway fund allocation are also without force and effect.
All right. That is the entire bill. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could I just go back to page 51? A quick question on the definition of we're eliminating one definition and describing it as freight, the raw and unprocessed agricultural products. Is there a definition of freight?
Senator Dibble or the testifier?
I'll defer to Ms. Berezovsky. I'm sure there is. Freight is freight.
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, there is no statutory definition of freight, and the effort was to select a word that was really all-encompassing rather than being restricted to agricultural products or other specified commodities.
Mr. Chairman, it does include the raw and unprocessed agricultural products, though, doesn't it?
Ms. Bufkowski?
Mr. Chair, yes, Senator Stump. It does still include the agriculture products.
Any other questions or amendments for the testifiers? Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, just real briefly, the severability clause. I assume that's in anticipation or in the concern if there was a statutory or constitutional challenge and that was found? What might be potentially at question here with the gross receipts tax?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Westrom, we don't think anything is at question and don't anticipate any trouble whatsoever. However, should that occurs, which we don't anticipate, we would be stuck then with having lowered the gas tax 6 cents. We would have a significantly big problem in that case.
Any other questions? I do have an amendment. Before I do that, Senator Nenow.
Senator Dibble, I assume you had this handed out, and thank you. One of the questions I had was, how much are we raising in taxes here for the state? And I do have that. But I do have two other questions. What is the estimated, and I understand this is going to have to be a projection because some of these local taxes are optional, they're opt-in. But is there an estimate for how much will be raised statewide locally for local impact for revenue for, I guess it would be cities and counties?
Senator Dibble.
Yeah, Mr. Chair,
Senator Nino, maybe Ms. Boyd has some sense, but there has been no local impact note, and I, you know, it's so subjective and speculative because we have no idea whether or not counties or cities would opt for any of those three mechanisms.
Any follow-up?
Okay.
Ms. Boyd?
Mr. Chair and Senator Nino, I was just going to confirm what Senator Dibble said. There's no estimates available since they are just local option.
I'm sorry. Senator Nino.
Thank you. And then my third question was, there are a number of fee increases in here, and I saw them, but I didn't take note as we went through. Could you list for me which fees are being increased, and then what is the total amount that we're raising in this bill with those increases?
Ms. Boyd can help us with that.
Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair and Senator Nino, the fee increases in the bill are basically only two. The vehicle title transaction fee increase and elimination of the transfer fee. As we said earlier, that would not start until fiscal year 2017 and raises a small amount of money both to the special revenue fund and the general fund, totaling roughly about $50,000 a year. And then the driver's license fee increases, primarily for the driver's license agents, and that would, of all 125 driver's license agents in the states, would raise collectively about $3.9 million a year. But because the filing fee charged by driver and vehicle services is tied to the same rate as driver's license agents, they would also see an increase in revenue. And in the first year would only be half a year's revenue of $750,000, and then thereafter $1.5 million a year. And that goes to a special revenue fund for driver services.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any new fees in here in addition to the fee increases, or is that it?
Mr. Chair and Senator Nino, I don't believe so. Except for the street maintenance fee, which again is optional.
Senator Nino.
That's not a new fee, it's just
expanding. Okay. I would like to offer the A29 amendment.
Senator Nino, Senator Campion, where's the A29 idea?
And members, as the
Senator Campion, you need to wait till the chair recognizes you. This is the chair's prerogative. He was scolding people earlier, so Senator Champion.
I just want, Madam Chair, I just want to make sure that you're on top.
Senator Cohen?
Let me take the chair back.
As the
Senator Champion.
As the amendment is coming around, this is an amendment to provide resources for the Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative, which is an initiative that goes through the Office of Justice Programs, and it is this is an initiative that is an effort to reform juvenile programs to really make sure that juveniles are not any longer just being detained, but that they are going through the system or not going through the system in a way to make sure that they are staying law-abiding. And this is an initiative that engages Hennepin County, Ramsey County, Dakota County, and just a number of different counties across the state. So it increases revenue for the Office of Justice Program by $100,000 in 2014 and also in 2015. So it's a total of $200,000, but $100,000 in each year. And this is something that the chair said that he would do, and I offer the A29 amendment.
Discussion on the A29 amendment.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Champion, I think this is I'm sorry if you already said this. I think Senator Hayden initiative was the chief author of this. We do have just a tiny bit of money left on the bottom line, and so this does not throw the bill out of balance, and so this is acceptable.
Senator Nino, further discussion?
Madam Chair, I was just going to make sure that we were staying in balance and all of that.
Senator Westman?
Senator Champion, what's the cost of this program?
It's Senator Champion.
It's a total of $200,000, but it's $100,000 in 2014 and $100,000 in 2015, so for a total of $200,000.
Senator Cohen?
Madam Chair, I just asked Mr. Nauman to make sure it remains in balance, and he does verify that's the case.
Further discussion on the A-29? Seeing none, Senator Champion moves the A-29 be adopted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on...
Madam Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Could I move the A-33 amendment, please?
Senator Sieben moves the A-53 amendment.
33.
And it's being passed out right now.
Madam Chair and members, well, it's
Senator Sieben
distributed. Now Mr. Chair again. Mm-hmm. While it's being distributed, essentially what this does is on line page 32, line 17, Senator Rest, it's my understanding in another committee added a reference to Botano Boulevard, and this is adding similar language for Red Rock, Gateway, and Rushline corridors.
Any discussion on the amendments? Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is fine. I think I explained earlier why Southwest had been included. Southwest is in its federal process, and so as an attempt to demonstrate, something tangible to the feds as we're looking to qualify for those matching dollars from the federal government, that triggered, the desire to have Botano be included. So, because that's how these things work, which has triggered this, and I completely understand why folks, if something shows up, other things should show up, and so it's acceptable.
Senator Bonoff.
On this amendment, I wondered if Mr. Chair, I wondered if Senator Sieben would include a friendly amendment to her amendment and add, and I'm struggling with if we would call it the 394 corridor commuter line or the Little Rock. My concern with it previously had been, called the Little Crow Transit Way, but my concern with calling it that is then it doesn't get studied as, I think I'll keep, I apologize for the going back and forth. Senator Sieben, I think I would add the 394 corridor commuter.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Dibble.
One thing that we do need to be sure of is that, the grants that are made from the Transit Improvement Board are consistent with the approved transportation policy plan. That's a statutory requirement. I know that Red Rock, Gateway, and Rushline are all identified lines that are receiving small grants, for planning and feasibility and study purposes, et cetera. Already, I'm not opposed necessarily, but I need to make sure that, the goal, of course, is that we build out our transitway vision and, as identified in the transportation policy plan presently, not in 30 or 40 years, but in 10 to 15 years, entrusting that work to the County Transit Improvement Board, working in conjunction with GEARS and the Metropolitan Council. If we just help ourselves to, appropriating those dollars and dispersing them, too thinly, we just won't accomplish that. I mean, so I'm not objecting. I'm just stating that, if we're being consistent with the TPP, that's great. Load them up. Let's just name them all, and that's fine, because that's going to happen anyways. Even if we do it or don't, this is what we call comfort language. I just want to be sure that we're not directing funds that otherwise wouldn't be directed.
All right, Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I appreciate that and certainly want to be consistent with that. This particular section had never been studied because it was only studied as a longer version all the way out to wherever it was, pretty far out west. And so by inserting it here, I think what it does is it raises the possibility of it being studied, and of course nothing should be done unless it turns out that it's financially viable. And Mr. Chair, and for the record, the reason why I had proposed this many years ago but pulled it back in support of Southwest, and I see nods around the room, because that was kind of an agreement of not even to look at this until we worked out Southwest.
So I believe that you were going to do an amendment to the amendment, Senator Bonoff?
Yes.
And would you articulate where you would like for that to occur?
On the amendment, it would be on line 1.3, after rush line, comma, and the 394 commuter corridor. And I think that's clear where that is, but I can certainly follow up as it moves along if there's a different way to name it.
Mr. Bonner?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff, and I defer to Ms. Berezovsky here. I don't know. I suppose the 394 corridor is the proper name for a transit way here, the way you've suggested adding it to the language. It would fit in a list of, you know, that would read Botno Boulevard, Red Rock Gateway, and Rush Lane transit ways. And I assume, I just want to make sure we have the proper name for the transit way. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, then it'll work the way you suggested it.
Thank you.
All right, Senator Sieben, how do you feel about that amendment to the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I think this is a pile-on amendment as all, and so I'm happy to support Senator Bonoff in piling on more.
All right, so... All right, so that amendment is incorporated to the A33 amendment. All those, any more discussion before? Senator Westrom.
I'm just wondering if it'd be a friendly amendment to add the Highway 27 west of Alexandria corridor.
Second that.
I'll withdraw that.
Any more discussion? All those in favor of the A33 amendment? As amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The A33 as amended is adopted. Any more amendments? Senator Engelbretson.
I'm sorry, I don't have any more amendments. Senator Sieben may have an amendment. I seen her raise her hand. I just have a comment or a question real quick.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can defer to Senator Engelbretson.
Okay, thank you. We can defer back and forth, I guess. Thank you. Senator, is there any costs in here that are going to rural dispatch centers for emergency dispatch electronics, electronic emergency dispatch? Was anybody ever talk to you about that at all? I see there's several different funding sources here through the 911 special revenue fund, and I'm just wondering if my local county were to apply for that, if that is covered in that particular fund.
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Engelbretson, can you direct me where you're looking at? Are you on the spreadsheet?
I was actually on page 20.
Senator Engelbretson.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, page 20, Mr. Turner. And my question to Mr.
Senator
Chair was that is any one of these sections here, subdivision 12, cover that type of a a grant from local units of government, county dispatch, or PSAPs?
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Engelbretson, you're talking about 20.12 to 20.15, I take it, public safety answering points?
Senator Engelbretson.
That's correct, yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Engelbretson, that's the base amount funding for PSAPs statewide. I am not sure how that is allocated. I think that's already allocated. This isn't an increase. There is an increase to PSAPs under this bill. However, if there's someone here who knows better, I would defer to them.
Is there anyone else? Senator Engelbretson.
Mr. Chair, I can work with Mr. Turner if that's all right. I should have been prepared, a little better prepared with that, but I do have something in my office, and I'd be certainly be able to work with you and the Senator on that question before it hits the floor. So that's fine. Thanks.
All right. Thank you so much. Any other discussions on what's the CINIFOT number? 1173.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you. I have the A32 amendment, please.
All right.
Distributed.
Senator Sieben moves the
A32
amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll begin to explain this. What this amendment is attempting to do is expand bus service in areas where, in transit corridors, where the preferred mode of transit is not yet determined. And I can walk through a little bit the rationale of why we want to do that, of why I feel that this is important. So in transit corridors, obviously one of the determinations for the feasibility of that transit corridor being developed into bus rapid transit, light rail, or commuter rail is the numbers that are used for bus service or the amount of ridership that are in those particular corridors. And so what this amendment is attempting to do is build the bus ridership in areas where there is a transit corridor, a transitway corridor, but the preferred mode of transit is not yet determined. So this attempts to get a little bit at some of the issues surrounding perceived or real disparity in bus service between different geographic areas of the metropolitan area. And we are, what the amendment is doing is using an annual average rate of 1% growth in the new money that's coming in. So it's not taking from the existing Met Council operations to be used for this expanded bus service. So
thank you.
I covered that. I'm happy to answer questions.
Senator Dibble, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, this amendment is fine. I'll just kind of say ditto on the earlier comments I made, you know, in terms of our larger goals and vision for raising these resources, you know, so that we can build out a transitway system in the next 10 to 15 years that would otherwise take us at our current rate, you know, 40 years and put us so far behind, not even able to accommodate the million more people that are coming here in the next 10 to 15 years. So, you know, I think this is fine, and I understand what Senator Sieben is trying to achieve, which is, you know, to build the rationale, build the ridership, build the impetus for transitways in those areas like Red Rock and others.
Any additional discussion on the A32 amendment? Bonham?
Mr. Chairman, just a small point on style here. Usually for appropriations like this, where it reads an amount necessary, I would recommend changing N on line 1.4 to the. It just reads a little more specifically.
Any suggestions?
Mr. Chair, I'd incorporate that into my amendment.
Okay. So any other discussion on the A32 amendment?
Mr. Chair, as amended, correct?
Yes, as amended. And if there's no more discussion on the A32 amendment as amended, all those in favor of this adoption say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. The A32 amendment as amendment is adopted. Any other amendments? Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have an amendment. I just have a question. If I would like to just have an explanation, if you could, of the A30 amendment. I must have not been here when that came up. So, and it's actually the bottom half of that amendment, which is from line 1.7 to 1.13.
Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf. You should love this because my Metro people hate it. And so what it does is, Ms. Boyd is going to help me, but I'm going to try to stumble through it. Basically, we're trying to make sure that of the new revenue that gets raised, split evenly between the old formula and the new formula. Well, that's basically what we're trying to accomplish. But maybe Ms. Boyd can articulate it with a little more precision.
Ms. Boyd,
it's kind of how it works. You know, currently the new formula is on those dollars that are raised above 20 cents. We're lowering the gas tax to 19 cents, and so then we had to kind of lower that threshold, so we're not completely wiping out all the money that comes in the new formula to 15 cents. But then those additional dollars that we raise, so that there's some growth, some new money as well as some growth on both sides. That's what this amendment does. How'd I do?
All right. Any other follow-up?
Thanks.
Senator Stump?
Nope. I understand it.
Any other questions or amendments for Senate File 1173?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach?
Mr. Chair, I just, if it looks like we're wrapping up, and so I just wanted to, given Senator Cohen expressed concern this afternoon on the Senate floor, I just wanted you to know that I jotted down some notes about the concerns and discussions that went on this evening, and if you'd like me to go over those, I've got them. But I just wanted to make sure that you felt like there was enough discussion, because I know you'd been concerned about some of the other omnibus bills.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, once again, the minority members of this committee have asked incisive, interesting, all around some pretty remarkable questions. And I thank you for that.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, I'd be happy to discuss those with you. I have all of them noted, over those later.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Could we meet in my office afterwards for maybe 2-4 hours? We could maybe.
Remarkable.
That's great.
Well,
Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, next time you mention that on the floor, I'll be sure to bring that right up for you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I. Mr. Chair, for the record, I went and whapped him upside the head after he said this. Thanks a lot.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, so did I.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
After my bill today and after your bill and after the Health and Human Services bill, Senators Dibble, myself, and Lori are all wondering why we wanted the committees we've got and why we didn't have Senator Sparks' committee instead.
Yeah. Farming's everybody's bread and butter.
Any additional discussions on Senate File 1173? Senator Letts.
I think that the answer to all the questions is consistency.
If nothing further, Senator Dibble moves Senate File 1173 as amended to be recommended to pass and sent to the Tax Committee, and nonpartisan staff is instructed to make technical changes. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay.
No.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, members will meet Monday evening. Is that at what, 6 o'clock?
Monday?
Monday.
Okay, great.
The Senate File 1173 is adopted and passed as amended.
Okay.
Thank you all for coming and have a great evening.
Don't forget to take
a picture.